Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu. On this week's show, we have Raptors broadcasting legend Jack Armstrong. Jack, thanks for your time.
William, how you doing? Great to see you. And legend, the check's in the mail. So thanks for that lie. But I appreciate it and really happy to be on with you. I always enjoy sitting, chatting hoops with you. So it's a pleasure to be on and it's a pleasure to be talking basketball.
Yeah, for sure. First off, the people got to know, how are you keeping up? What's life been like for you during the shutdown?
Been keeping busy. Both the folks at MLSE and at TSN have kept me busy. Obviously TV wise, with a number of different requests every day, and radio shows, and things for corporate sponsors and the like. So I've kept quite busy. I've been doing a lot of speaking as well. For different companies and town halls. I've spoken to a lot of teams. A lot of teams are doing right now where they have team meetings and then they'll have a guest speaker. So I've spoken for a lot of different teams. So to me, I really enjoyed that element of it, kind of learning. I'm not a big technology guy, so to have to figure out Zoom and Skype and DeGiro and WebEx and all these other things, because everyone has a different one, of course. No one can all have the same thing. So
That would make too much sense.
Exactly. So it's been a good learning experience. Obviously, it's been a difficult time in the world with the pandemic, which is so sad and so unfortunate. And then the unfortunate incident in Minneapolis and Atlanta, and we've had so many other just horrible instances of racial strife and people just not figuring out how to get along. So that stuff really bothers me. And I just try to keep busy. I ran this morning, and I try to get out and play golf once in a while and tennis once in a while. And so overall, I feel like I'm doing good. I'm blessed. And, thoughts and prayers to people who have it a lot worse than you and I, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I think, honestly, if you are just bored at this time during this really, really difficult period in the world, then you're probably very lucky, right? I mean, a lot of people are losing their jobs and the economy is taking a huge hit. And on top of everything else that's going on, I mean, for you and everything like that, it's been okay in your area in terms of cases, everything like that. You're all right?
Yes, I live right across from Niagara Lake. I live Queenston Heights, Niagara Lake. So I live in Lewiston, New York. My backyard is on the Niagara River. I can see Canada.
Okay.
400 yards from me. Literally, I'm on the border. So our area right here, west of New York, which would be, constitute Buffalo, is in phase 3 already.
Oh, okay, good.
So things are progressing well. And, knock wood, it continues to improve. And it continues to improve all around North America, all around the world. So obviously, as we know, we need, treatments that work, and ultimately we need a vaccine that really would will help eliminate it. So until that time, I think we're all dealing with kind of a new reality. What that reality is, as we know, it kind of is different every day because it's kind of a moving target. But nonetheless, I think you do the best you can on a daily basis. I try myself to try to have a daily plan of different things that I'm doing that day. And I think the more structured I am, the less I allow that other stuff, the anxiety and the unknown, to affect me.
Right. I think that's very smart. You know, we're recording this on the day, the 1 year anniversary of the parade, which is actually, I mean, with all the in Toronto, that's still solidly social distancing and everything is still in effect. People are wearing masks and things like that. To think back on 1 year ago when there was like 3 million people packed into the streets of downtown Toronto, I got to ask you, like, some of the happier memories from last year around this time, in terms of celebrating, in terms of calling the Raptors winning the championship, everything like that. What are some of your favorite memories from a year ago?
Well, the parade itself, I mean, the weather that day was spectacular.
Oh, my God.
It was beautiful. Like, you couldn't script it any better. And I remember after I worked the parade, and we were there. It was like, I felt like it was on the Jerry Lewis telephone. It was so long. hopefully they get barricades the next time the Raptors win so people can't crush the street and actually the cars can proceed at a normal pace. But obviously there hasn't been a big parade since 1993 with the Blue Jays. So, but now they have an idea that maybe you need to move the parade along a little quicker. But nonetheless, I remember after the parade ended, walking down Yonge Street with one of my television colleagues. And I had, to, you know, there was no way you could Uber or take a taxi.
Oh, no, no.
And I'm wearing a suit with no tie. And now, you know, everyone's kind of recognizing you and they all want a picture. So my buddy who I work with was dying hysterically laughing because I said, look, keep your head down and keep walking because these people are going to know me. So, and when they ask for a picture, I'm just going to say, sure, just walk with me and I'll take the picture, but never stop. Because the minute you stop, you'll never get out of there. And I had a party I had to go to and I can't miss the party, obviously. So yeah, well, I took a ton of pictures as I walked down Yonge Street, but I never stopped. So that was an accomplishment in and of itself. But it was just a joyous occasion. It was just so much excitement. And kind of that moment where you're just constantly pinching yourself saying, is this really happening? I went for a run that morning and there was a guy out running along Lake Ontario and the guy was wearing a Raptors championship t-shirt. I don't know, you know, they sold them, you know, online. I don't know where they got them. But
I think every single person in Canada got one of those t-shirts.
So here I am just a few days after the Raptors win and I'm running in the morning before the parade. And I'm like, really? Did that really happen? Like, and then you go to a parade with 3 million people. You're like, is this really happening? So actually it really didn't all sink in until like opening night against New Orleans where the banner went up and you know, the players and the coaches and the executives and owners got the rings. And then you're like, wow, it did happen. That banner's there forever. So wonderful memories.
Speaking of the ring, you got a ring, right?
Yes.
Where do you keep your ring? I'm not trying to steal anything.
I keep it locked up. I wore it the other night on Saturday. My next door neighbor had a social distancing cocktail party. So I wore my ring that night because it was a 1 year anniversary. So, you know, obviously you spend the whole night with the ring off. Everyone's handing it around and taking pictures with it and all that. But it's really fun, and I've only worn it a few times. But when you do wear it, I mean, it's just a remarkable thing. And, you know, obviously it's my 22nd year with the Raptors. So, I mean, the joy that I get from that is the joy I see in the faces of the fans and so many loyal fans across the country that just love basketball. And I was asked a question the other day, Wayne, about, you know, when Kawhi Leonard, you know, the whole free agency stuff last year, and him being followed and the helicopters and the craziness of that. And people obviously see the whole Kawhi thing as a disappointment that he left. And it was very disappointing. At the same time, to his credit, he was a true blue pro. He delivered the goods. He came in from start to finish and did the right things and said the right things. And I give the guy credit. And you know what? You know, it was his decision to go home. That's his right. But nonetheless, the thing that jumps out at me is that craziness of the helicopter was almost like the OJ car chase.
I was going to say, yeah.
It told me right there, like, this thing is amazing. Like, across Canada, People love basketball. So, like, not only do you win a championship, but you see the aftermath with that free agency chase and the fact that, you know, the images and the excitement, if you're a kid in your teens or you're a kid and you're 8, 9, 10 years old and you're swept up in this stuff, you know, it, as we go along 10, 20, 30 years from now, those are the future consumers in Canada. And they're basketball fans. So to me, I feel like our sport's in really good shape.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the example I always bring up is my my little brother. He's 10 years younger than me, so he's 17. And, man, I mean, you know, he was a basketball fan because I was always a basketball fan. And so he followed it because I was always around him. But last year, especially with the Raptors going all the way, I mean, he is just so excited about basketball now. You know, we get together occasionally to hang out, of course, you know, distance and stuff like that. And one of the ways we do that is we shoot some hoops or whatever. And we spent like a solid 15 minutes trying to recreate, the Kawhi shot, which obviously is impossible. That thing is, there's no way to do that. It's hard enough to hit a baseline follow in the first place. But he's just so into basketball now. I mean, he's always coming to me and asking me about Chris Bosh and making me feel old. Like, he's like, what was Chris Bosh like? And I was like, wow, he's good. Left-handed. But yeah, I mean, that's exactly the kind of people you're talking about, right? There's going to be this huge new generation of basketball, and it's only going to grow from here. So that's fantastic. And so, you know, on the subject of basketball, you know, before we talk about the Raptors and everything that's going on, there seems to be, so the NBA has a plan for returning, and it doesn't seem to, it doesn't seem to have less momentum behind the plan. I think the plan is, you know, seems like the players want to execute it, but there is a certain faction of players who are concerned about sort of health concerns, and also that there's another section that is concerned of the NBA's return detracting from some of the attention going to the protests. Just for you personally, where do you stand on the league's return, and have you seen some of the details of you know, what it's going to look like?
Well, I think from a medical perspective, I think the league and their teams have taken every step possible to try to make sure to do this right. Dot all the I's, cross all the T's. I mean, you're talking about the NBA with the ability to draw in and utilize people that are world-class experts in the medical field. And then every team has their own medical staff. Every team has their own, you know, training staff. So I think they're doing everything possible. Is it perfect? Probably not. You know, it's perfectly imperfect. But nonetheless, I think the effort and the willingness to be open-minded and to try to make this thing work, I think is all there. So I applaud that. Do I think the NBA coming back, you know, obviously is there a financial element there? Yeah. But if you look at the cost of putting this whole thing on in Orlando, not only to each team but to the league itself, and then when you do the accounting after the fact, the ability to get the game back in the eyes of the public is paramount. I don't think they're going to make the money that everyone thinks they're going to make, because the expense of putting this on is going to be dramatic. And I think people are missing that a little bit. So this is more about getting a public that has been denied a lot of things, unfortunately, an opportunity to maybe enjoy something positive. I think from a standpoint of the social unrest and the racial issues, I stand behind the protests. I agree with their mission and what they're trying to do, and I think it's great. As you know, I'm the father of three African American boys, so to me, you know, I'm super sensitive to it. And, you know, I've grown up in the sport of basketball, and our sport is predominantly black. So I get it. I totally get it. I totally respect it. And again, for my own family situation, it's deeply personal. So I respect what the guys are saying. And I look at both schools of thought. And I would say I would side on the school of thought that I really feel confident that the NBA community will embrace it. I think they'll use the platform and the forum to get the proper messages and the right messages out. that are going to talk about equality and unity and respect. And to me, I think it's a great platform to do it. So I would probably side, if I had to choose a side, I would choose at LeBron James's side, where he feels like our sport is important and his message gains strength because of what he does for a living and the impact it has and the eyeballs it gets. And, you know, when you look at a guy like LeBron James, you can have any opinion you want. Michael Jordan, who's better, all this stuff. You know, all those different things, but to me, I'm of the belief that you know, this guy's done the right stuff off the court. He's a good son, he's a good husband, he's a good father, and he's done an amazing amount in the community and used his stardom to help others. So I think that if we don't have NBA basketball, and you're a player and you're at a protest, that's great. In a lot of ways, though, you become John Q. Public. You're just with other people. I think if you are in a place where you can get your message out loud and clear in the NBA community to get united together, I think it's going to help. And to me, that's an important element of it that I hope that guys ultimately embrace. And from a social media perspective, I mean, you could put your message out anywhere you are. So you could be in Orlando, you could be in Oshkosh, you could be in Oslo, wherever. You can get your message out. So to me, I'm on the side of the fact that if they're going to be able to play, let's play. And through playing, let's make sure we use that platform to really educate people and try our best to unite people. To see the light.
Yeah, I mean, I think the NBA is actually doing the right thing here in the sense that they're allowing, you know, if some players don't feel comfortable, if they feel more comfortable using their platform to sit out, if they feel more comfortable being at home because of the health concerns or because of how much time it would take away physically just from their regular lives and from their family, then the NBA seems to be allowing them to do that, which is, I think, the right thing to do. One question I thought of in terms of just maybe in the media perspective is, how is this going to work for some of you guys? And I guess there's been no real updates given for what writers will do. I doubt we'll be going to Orlando, but what's it going to look like for you guys on the TV side?
I don't really have an answer to that yet. I don't know. My guess is based upon what Kevin Harlan from Turner said last week. He said, like, and Turner and Disney, obviously ABC, ESPN, they gave the league a 9-year, $24 billion U.S. TV deal. So they're like the partners. And Kevin Harlan mentioned last week that Turner's going to be calling games from the Atlanta studio, and maybe they would go for the conference finals. They don't carry the NBA finals. ABC does in the States. But he wasn't even sure if that was going to happen. So if that's happening with Turner, I would imagine when you start looking at the 30 teams and you start looking at, you know, a writer from, the Toronto Star or the New York Times or the Chicago Tribune or the LA Times or the Washington, whatever. I mean, I'd be shocked that, you know, you're going to have a significant number of media people. Plus with the fact that each team's going to have a very, very small, limited travel party, and they're going to really limit the scope of who is in the bubble. I think if you're a writer, you know, the access you're going to have is minimal. So you could do the same job from where you are currently than if you were physically standing in Orlando. You'll get no closer to the player than you would sitting in your own apartment right now in Toronto. So I don't know the answers. I haven't been told anything yet. But when I heard Kevin Harlan's read Kevin Harlan's comments last week, and that's like the one of the two big media partners of the league, I'd be surprised if there's a lot of people there. You know, and now obviously the fact that it's on a Disney property and ESPN is part of that. You know, would you see a Stephen A. Smith or Adrian Wojnarowski or someone like that? Whatever. But they're going to have to make that decision too. Do they want to be in the bubble? for 3 months. You know, that's a lot of time away from family. So that'll be an interesting dynamic.
Now, put yourself in Nick Nurse's shoes for a second. How, as a coach, how would you prepare your team for something like this? I'm not sure if you've probably never been anything in this kind of scenario whatsoever, but how would you start to approach something like your season gets interrupted, you sit out for 3 months, and then you're restarting basically almost a new season with a whole training camp and everything like that before quickly cutting into the playoffs? How would you approach that?
Well, first of all, Nick Nurse has the right stuff. He's a terrific coach. We've seen that in his almost 2 years. I mean, in my opinion, he's the NBA coach of the year based upon all the twists and turns and the ups and downs the Raptors had to deal with this year with all the injuries, and have the third best record in the league and the second best record in the East is an amazing accomplishment. This guy can really coach. With that being said, I think his experience as a coach in Europe, mm-hmm. I think his experience as a coach in the G League, D League, I think he's well-suited for a unique scenario like this because he's coached that way before. The thing I admire most about Nick above everything else, he's not one of those coaches that talks about what he doesn't have. He focuses on what he does have. So I think he's going to look constantly at being progressive, focusing on what he controls, and not worry about what he can't control. So the things you can control, and I've talked to Nick about this a few different times because I've done some events with him for the Raptors and asked him some of these questions and chatted with him about it. I think they're going to really focus on, again, they're a sound defensive team. I think he's going to really continue to build on those principles and have a sound base defensively. And I think he's also very cognizant of the fact, and I've been through two lockouts, 98-99, my first year with the Raptors, Vince Carter's rookie year, and then the 2011-2012 lockout where we had 66 games. And I think if you study those two elements, a 50-game season, a 66-game season, and right now we're in the mid-60s in terms of games, but now we're going into a new crazy scenario. Offense really struggles. Execution team-wise, cutting, movement, spacing, screening, crispness of passes, timing, flow. And secondly, conditioning, offensive conditioning, that I run a staggered screen for you, and I get you open with four on the shot clock in the fourth quarter with 3.5 minutes to play. Do you have the shooting fitness to make that shot? You know, and being through two lockouts, there was some ugly basketball because guys don't have the jump, the flow, the mojo to make those plays, and kind of teams get bogged down in the mud. So if you're sound defensively, and you can kind of jumpstart your offense from your defense and getting the running game going, I think that, number one, that's important. And two, I think the teams that really focus hard on getting good flow and good execution going, and then guys, a major emphasis on getting guys in great offensive fitness shape, is going to be a big part of it. And I look at the fact that the Raptors have chemistry, they have role definition, they have veteran players, they have smart players, they've won, they know what the deal is, they got excellent coaches. I feel like they have a lot of good ingredients in place. And if they're healthy, they're a contender. If they're fully healthy and stay fully healthy, they are a legitimate contender. Will they win it? I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. I don't have a clue what this is all going to look like, but I do think they're a contender.
Yeah, I mean, Bobby Webster was on TV the other day, and he kind of made this point about how, you know, Nick, with his sort of very innovative style of coaching, you know, having many tricks in the bag, sort of different defensive looks to go to and things like that, I think that might favor – the Raptors in a limited tournament like this, where, as you mentioned, defensively, you know, that's where you're going to have the advantage. You know, defense travels on the road, and you're literally on the road the whole time.
You know, you bring up a good point. That's why I raised my hand. I was just going to touch exactly on what you said. Because the one element I've had a problem with all this, and it's kind of, no one's really, they've talked about it a little bit, but not enough. And I brought it up to Bobby Webster. I brought it up to Nick Nurse. I think the really good teams in our league in this concept, the advantages, think about it. When we had the 66 game lockout in 2011-12, we had 1 through 8, and the top 4 seeds in each conference got home court. We played 64, 65 games so far.
Mm-hmm.
What are they getting? You know? So
the best hotels, all right? The best, yeah, Mickey Mouse impersonators.
Great, big deal. You know, like, so to me, I haven't heard anything yet. Is there going to be any benefit for these teams in game?
Mm-hmm.
So here's the question, and I think it's an important one. You look at the Raptors, and now we're talking neutral court. There's no home court. It's all seeding now. Who were the best road teams in the NBA this year? And I always say the contending teams are the teams with the best road records, the true contenders. I think in a situation like this now, I think your habits are who you are. And now where there's no stimuli, where you have fans in effect, I think really has an impact on things. So if you do your research and look at who the top road teams were this year, I think those are the teams, in my opinion, that are the best equipped, because they're good at home, they're good on the road, and I think they'll be good on neutral. You know,
well, I mean,
my opinion.
Well, I mean, to your point, the Raptors this year, despite all the injuries, and remember, the Raptors, aside from OG and Obi, the top 8 guys in the rotation, every single player outside of OG missed at least 10 games. So it's very difficult to coach in that situation. The Raptors are 23-9 on the road, just like they're 23-9 at home.
What does
to
that
compare
tell you?
That, well, the Bucks are only – the Bucks, I mean, the Bucks are like 6.5 games above the Raptors. They're 25-9. So they're only a game better than the Raptors on the road. And you compare that, you know, the Raptors have a better road record than the Celtics, way better than Miami, who's 14-19 on the road. Philly this year, 10-24 on the road. They're just horrendous away from home. Fantastic team in Philly, though. And then you look in the West, I mean, you know, only the Lakers at 26-6 have a better road record than the Raptors. So we're talking about the Raptors. I mean, it's not a surprise because they're the third best record in the NBA anyway, but they're the third best road team. And, to your point, last year in the finals, I mean, they win 3 straight games in Golden State. They were 4-0 on Oracle last year before that arena shut down. And they definitely have that ability.
And they won 2 road games in Orlando. They won a road game in Philly, and they won a road game in Milwaukee. And so to me, there's something about the makeup of the group, there's the makeup of the coaching staff that gives me calm. That gives me confidence. Does it tell me, hey, they're the champ? There's a lot of good teams. We'll find that out. I just think that they can go into this experience saying, you know what? We've proven ourselves in every venue. This is a new venue, but I think habits travel. You know, what's the old line? Aristotle or Socrates? Excellence is a habit, not an act. You know, you've mentioned some actors. And then you've mentioned some teams that have habits. You know, you look at a team like Philadelphia, they're amazing. Are they a team that feeds off the stimulus of playing at home? And maybe, what are they away from home? Are they actors or is it habit? You know, like, you know, so that's a true test for Brett Brown now and their team. They got great talent. I think they're, you know, I don't want to play them. Who wants to play Phil? They're loaded with talent. They're a terrific team. But for themselves, if I'm Philadelphia and I'm Brett Brown and my coaching staff, those are the things I'm going, we got to be tight. Our habits got to be tight. We got to be sound because it doesn't matter. It's all neutral now. We got to be, this is who we got to be. So to me, I think that's an important element. But I go back to what I said before. what as a league are we doing for the teams that have earned something? Mm-hmm. The lockout season, they earned something, they got something. What are we doing for them now? That's still a question that needs to be answered.
Yeah, and that's where, I mean, some of the proposals that have been reported, I mean, they sound a little gimmicky, like, you know, extra coaches challenges, or you can designate one player on the team that gets 7 fouls instead of 6, or you get the ball to start, you know, the second, third, and fourth quarter, and you get, I guess, 2 extra possessions that way. You know, I mean, that all seems kind of a little gimmicky to me, and maybe marginal, but it might just be a situation where there is not a great answer. I mean, Nick was asked about this in a conference call with reporters, and he talked about how, you know, Nick's always got stories from Belgium, and any chance he gets, he'll tell you something about Belgium or the Great Britain or Iowa or something like that. But, you know, he mentioned where he coached in Belgium, where it was 4 tiers, 4 divisions, and he was obviously coaching a tier 1 team. And he had to face a tier 4 team. And the way they did it was the tier 4 team got like a 30-point advantage. So they were up 30-0 to start the game. and Nick had to coach his way out of that. So, I mean, that's almost like the opposite scenario where you're giving the lower teams an extra 10 points.
Yeah, and I brought up the point in the first round after we play 8 games, you know, regular season games, and now the top 4 seeds in a best-of-7 series, you've only got to win 3. And the other guy's got to still win his 4, you know. So after the first round, do we reseed or do we stay in a bracket format? You know, like those are – I just think that kind of stuff needs to – no, people would say that's crazy, you know, that you only have to win 3 out of 7. Well, guess what? Why are we playing 8 regular season games? If the regular season's unimportant, why are we throwing 8 more games in? Why are we bringing the Phoenix Suns and a Washington Wizards?
I was going to say.
Seriously. But if we're going to – why are we not having that discussion? I really believe that. And I think that – you know, what are we doing for the Lakers, the Bucks, the Clippers, the Raptors, teams like that? What are we doing for those teams? You know, and they've earned that. I mean, and it may be 8 games later, there might be one of those teams that gets surpassed by somebody. Maybe, maybe not. But what are we doing for those teams? They've earned something. If not, let's not play regular season games. Right?
I mean, that's a very fair point. But, you know, the Raptors fighting an uphill battle, I guess it's not necessarily, you know, that out of the question and that unordinary. You know, to your point earlier about offensive execution being a little bit behind defensive execution in a situation like this, I think that's where having a guy like Marc Gasol back and hopefully fully healthy and ready to go. It seems like, you know, he's really taken a professional approach to quarantine. I mean, I'm not sure if you've seen some of the pictures. Mark looks almost like a different person, really. He looks extremely slimmed down. You know, I think with Marc Gasol fully healthy and back on the Raptors, I think first off, we haven't actually seen, in my opinion, the very, very best version of Marc Gasol with the Raptors yet in his 2 years. Obviously, it's hard to argue against a championship, but, you know, I think mostly the defense has been great. The passing has been great. It's the scoring that necessarily hasn't been there the last 2 years as it was with Memphis. I feel like, you know, with the Marc Gasol back into this team, back into the starting lineup, that activates so much. And I think it just helps you to have more playmakers in a time where you do have limited time to prepare and get ready. Having a guy like Mark who can stretch the floor, who can set screens, who can pass, orchestrate your offense, that's got to be huge.
No, you're right. You know, it's interesting. When I was a young coach, I was at a clinic, and Bobby Knight, the Hall of Fame coach from Indiana, who I actually had the good fortune to coach against him. I also recruited his son, Patrick, who ended up playing for Bob at Indiana. But I'll never forget at the clinic, a coach raised his hand and said, you know, if I have an early season tournament, maybe a little earlier than everybody else, and I only have a little bit of practice time, how should I get ready for that early season game? And his thing was, offense is always behind defense. He goes, and if you want to be really good, he goes, spend some extra time on your offense, because other teams are going to be way behind on it. If you can just be simplistic defensively and have your base coverages down, and then really try to the offensive elements I mentioned before, well, then the point you made about Marc Gasol, he adds to all that stuff that you just mentioned and all the things I mentioned earlier about flow and spacing. And, you know, he's a five-man who could shoot the three, so he spreads the floor. His screening, his passing, the improv ability where now you give him the ball, there's nine on the shot clock, cut, 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 screen, cut, boom, bang. He'll get somebody a shot with three on the shot clock because it has nothing to do with execution. It has everything to do with the fact that you're adding another guy with an awareness level that he, you know, there is a, it's like football. The thing I love, they have that all 22 where the quarterback drops back. And now, you know, on a Monday morning, you can evaluate the reads of your quarterback, you know, the decisions that they make and the coverages that they make and sometimes blitz reads and, you know, all those different things, double coverage on a top receiver. And I think the best quarterbacks see, they have great vision and they recognize and diagnose things quickly. And I look at a guy like Marc Gasol, he knows what the other nine guys are doing. And I think when things go wacky, and a lot of times at the back end of the clock, which is red alert time, things get a little goofy. Do you have calm guys? You have guys that in unstructured offense can make something happen. Can you get a high percentage shot? Having Marc Gasol on the floor within that offensive scheme in an environment that probably will get bogged down in fitness issues for teams and flow issues offensively, it's nice to have another guy like that.
Yeah, and you know, one of my favorite plays, I've been watching so many plays from last year's playoff run. One of my favorite plays is just, I think Mark had the ball up top, and he just gave Kawhi this, like, nod. He just went like, you know, go, go. And then he slips his pass, Kawhi's darting to the rim, and he gets a dunk on Giannis and one, and it's just, you know, yeah, Mark is, it's an incredible luxury to have. Moving to some of the younger guys, you know, you've seen a lot of guys this year take a step forward, and you know, the Raptors with OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, Norman Powell, Fred VanVleet, this young core has really emerged from sort of where they were a couple years ago, sitting on the bench, watching some of these guys ahead of them, to being those guys and being the core of a team that that wins. I mean, out of those four, OG, Pascal, Norm, and Fred, which one to you has made the biggest jump in their career this season?
Well, obviously, I think you could see Fred VanVleet really coming through late in the playoffs last year, and you saw Siakam blow up last year in the playoffs as well. So I think that was a trend that was already on its way. I said at the beginning of the season, before we even played games, that the two most important guys for the Raptors this year were Norm Powell and OG Anunoby. You're replacing Danny Green and you're replacing Kawhi Leonard. I think if you look at what those two guys, I think Norm Powell, you've seen a pretty clear growth. To me, at going into the All-Star break, I said after the, I don't know if it was the last game before the All-Star break, I said the guy that's the most, that has to pick his game up, that has to take that next step after the All-Star break is OG Anunoby. And to me, I really was excited about what I was seeing from OG Anunoby. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I was really enjoying what I was seeing from him after the All-Star break. I started to see a guy with more of a purpose and a consistency and a levelness about his game, that he was really settling into a good groove. So I'm excited about what I'm seeing from Norm Powell and OG Anunoby. I feel bad for Norm with the injuries. But and I think it speaks volumes about, and I've had this discussion with Masai and Bobby. You know, the reason why the Raptors are good is that those four guys you mentioned never got handed a minute. They had to earn it. They had to earn it. Like, they came in, every one of them, and played on good teams. So there was a good team there. So like, hey man, if you're not good enough, you don't play, because we're good enough. We're playing without you. We'll find someone else to take your minutes. So to me, I think you look at so many of these bad teams in the NBA that hand these quote unquote name players minutes, and these guys are paper tigers. They get stats, but they don't win anything. And I think if you look at those four guys, they all impact winning. Now, they might not be as talented a player as the number one pick of a bad team, but nonetheless, the Raptor guys have winning habits because they've had to develop them. They've had to earn their keep in a good organization that's well-run with the right philosophy. And these other guys have just earned they've gotten stats, but they can't figure out how to win a game when it needs to be won. And to me, I think that I'm excited about what I've seen from all four of them. And I applaud the mentality and the philosophy of Masai and Bobby and their staff, and collectively in partnership when Dwayne and his staff were here and now Nick and his staff, they've done an amazing job. And I think Masai's greatest strength is the fact that the guy is amazingly patient. He lets things breathe. He's an emotional, hard-nosed competitor, which is great. Nonetheless, when it comes time to making evaluations and decisions, he lets things breathe. And I think when you let things breathe and you're not impulsive and reactive, I think guys now have the opportunity to play through mistakes and mature. And they don't play looking over their shoulder. They play with confidence. And I think when you look at those four players and a lot of other organizations, their growth and improvement would have been derailed because they had a bad game in game 17 and they got buried on the bench in game 18. I don't think you've seen that in Masai's tenure. I don't think you've seen Dwayne do it. I don't think you've seen Nick do it. And I think a big reason why these guys have all gotten better is that this is one of the best run organizations in pro sports.
Yeah, I mean, it's really Spurs-esque, you know? Like, this is what the Spurs were doing. You know, obviously there's no Tim Duncan, and Tim Duncan's the number one pick. So that's a whole different story altogether. But it does remind me of, you know, the Spurs getting a guy like Tony Parker, 29th, or Monta Ginobili at that end of the second round. And you know, you compare it to a team like the Knicks. You know, they have a lottery pick every single year, and they got all these guys. And when we're talking about OG, Pascal, Norm, and Fred, I mean, the highest pick used there was, I think, 23rd on OG Anunoby, or maybe 22nd. So we're not exactly talking about, like, high lottery guys. And yet, I would take the Raptors' core over pretty much any core. Well, not any core. There's, like, some really good ones. I think New Orleans has a pretty damn good core, but it's really good.
You know, my colleague, Eric Smith, he made a great point a few months ago, and I was like, man, I forgot about this. He said the Gravis Vasquez trade is the trade that keeps on giving because they got Norm Powell and then they got the draft rights to OG Anunoby, you know, like, and that was just like a forgotten move that two of the four players you just mentioned were part of that, you know? So to me, it's the execution of the right trade. And then on top of that, the execution of the development plan, which I think, you know, these guys have just done an excellent job, and they deserve to be commended for.
Now, I've taken up a lot of your time, so I'm going to ask you two more questions. One, I wanted to get your thoughts on just the two rookies. You know, I mean, I guess there's three rookies this year with DeJuan Hernandez as well, but he's been sort of out of the lineup. The two guys that we've seen actually perform for the big club, Terrence Davis and Matt Thomas, what's one thing about their game that kind of impresses you about both those guys that, you know, people might not notice? Obviously, everyone can see Matt Thomas can shoot. Everyone can see Terrence Davis is athletic. But what's one thing, you know, that you're seeing that's sort of going under the radar for those two guys?
Well, first of all, they're both really fine young men, and I enjoy chatting with them. I guess the thing that jumps off the page about me about Terrence is, there's a spirit there. There's a can-do spirit. There's a belief. It's not cocky. It's genuine. It's humble. It's blue-collar. And he's willing to work. And I just love his can-do spirit. And with that spirit, you see that he can get through resiliency. He's had some bad games, but he's also had some great games. Yep. And he doesn't quit on himself. So I like that, I like that can-do spirit. And I think when Matt Thomas, There was a stretch there where Matt Thomas wasn't playing, and he was healthy, and he wasn't playing much or wasn't playing at all. And I said to him one night, watching him work out before a game, and he was drenched. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that night he didn't play. And I just said to him the next night, it was a back-to-back or whatever. I said, I just want you to know, as a former coach, how impressed I am with your professionalism, that you have a, you know, plan your work and work your plan, that you come out every night and you are professional and you are prepared. And when your number's called, you're going to be ready. And that's habit. Mm-hmm. And again, I go back to excellence is a habit, not an act. He's not an actor. He's an habitual creature that goes out every night and goes about his business and prepares for his work in terms of his stretching routine, in terms of his approach. And when you are an habitual person and you have good habits, you know, because practice doesn't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect. His work ethic and his practice habits are excellent. So mm-hmm. to me, I think you can throw a guy like that in the game and feel confident because he's ready. So I think those would be the two things that jump out at me about those two guys. And again, on top of that, William, they're breaking in on a winning team. Yes. They don't play if they don't get it done. They do play if they do get it done. Whereas you put those guys on a bad team, maybe they'll get minutes, but that lousy environment creates bad habits. And mm-hmm. I think if you do a study of the best teams in all the major sports, I think that's something that really jumps off the page. And again, as a former coach, and I've been involved with really good teams, I've been involved with really bad teams, and somewhere in between. And for my 22 years with the Raptors, I've seen all types of teams. I think what's going on right now in Toronto, and when you look at a kid like Terrence and Matt, they are so fortunate to break in an environment like this.
And then lastly, I had to ask you this because I was doing some research and I was looking at an interview that you did with Eric Kareen of The Athletic. And you told a story about how you almost joined the front office with Wayne Embry back in 2006. What's the story there? I mean, that would have been very big.
Well, yeah, you know, it's interesting. That was, you know, Wayne and I are very close. And at that time, Rob Babcock's kind of run was coming to an end. And Rob is a wonderful guy who, you know, just gave it his best shot. And it just unfortunately wasn't working out. And, you know, Wayne and I used to talk a lot. And, you know, first 8-9 years with the Raptors, you know, I had a lot of people ask me, are you going to go back to coaching college? Would you be interested in being a pro assistant and all that? And every year I got further into it, I had the interest in coaching was less and less. I'm like, I don't want to do that anymore. I've done that. And it's a grind. The fascination, though, with overseeing a team and building a team and being part of a management group to do that, to me, was fascinating. And spending time with Wayne really got me excited about that. I have a few people that Wayne's a mentor, Frank Layden, who is the former president, GM, head coach of the Utah Jazz, who built an amazing organization and drafted Karl Malone and John Stockton and hired Jerry Sloan, and Bill Polian, who's a six-time NFL Executive of the Year, Hall of Famer, who I'm very close with as well. So I've spent a lot of time with Frank. I've spent a lot of time with Bill. And obviously I was spending a lot of time with Wayne. And those guys would encourage me and say, you know what, you'd be really good at that. You know, like maybe you don't want to coach anymore, but if you ever decide to the broadcasting to do something different, consider that. So it just kind of happened where Wayne took over, and he wasn't sure if he was going to be the full-time GM or if he was just going to do it on an interim basis. And he had to work that out with Larry Tannenbaum and Richard Petty, who was the president CEO at the time. But he needed somebody to help him. So, you know, we had the discussion, and then the discussion with Larry and Richard, and to their credit, it was very nice of them. You know, they reached out to, you know, the people, my bosses at MLSE, and my bosses at the time, I was working on the side as well for Rogers. Now I work for TSN, and basically said, you know, if we bring a new GM in and this guy wants to bring all his own guys in, that Jack can have his jobs back on the broadcast side. On the other hand, if Wayne takes the job or the new guy coming in wants to keep him, then, you know, that's great too. So that was the agreement, and I agreed to do it. And then literally within 24 hours, they had to put the brakes on it, because I think it's the first time in the history of the NBA that a standing GM left one team to go to another in the middle of the season. And it's never happened. And that was Brian Colangelo leaving Phoenix in the middle of the season and going to the Toronto Raptors. And, you know, so at that point, Wayne mentioned to Brian about what we were going to be doing. And Brian, you know, it was great. I get along great with Brian. And he had already had kind of the guys he wanted to bring in mind.
Right.
So to me, I had the discussion with Brian. I said, Brian, look, you and I don't know each other very well. And I get it. I've hired, I've fired, I've been there. You want to bring people in that you kind of have a relationship with and that are going to fit your plan. And we'll get to know each other over the years. But nonetheless, you got to bring in the guys that you feel comfortable with. So he did that. And here I am 14 years later, and I've had an amazing time broadcasting. And, you know, that ship has sailed. You know, at this point in my life, I'm enjoying doing this. But yeah, that's a true story, and that did happen. I don't know how it would have turned out. I probably would have ended up being someday the GM of the Sacramento Kings and gotten fired like every other King GM. So it probably all worked out pretty good that I am where I am. And but the relationships you develop, and Wayne Embry, no question in my heart, in my mind, is one of those guys I look at when I close my eyes. I think about the great people I've met in sports and great mentors in life. Wayne is right there at the top.
Right, for sure. No, I mean, I'm you know, as a fan, I'm thrilled to see you on the broadcast every day and watch you on games and stuff like that and listen to you. But, you know, a part of me does kind of feel wistful that, you know, I just like to imagine you as a Raptors assistant GM, someone calling in with a terrible offer and you just telling them to get that garbage out of here. Like,
well, that been well, when I look at the job, Masai and Bobby, Teresa and Jeff Weltman before, and the great people they've had in the front office, and Brian Colangelo did the best job he could. I love Brian. Did a lot of good things, and I had a really good relationship with him and Glenn Grunwald and Rob Babcock and Wayne. And, you know, it's not an easy job. And these people, I have a lot of respect for the job they've done. And the management staff we have now, I mean, they're second to none. They're top notch.
For sure. For sure. Jack, I've taken so much of your time. I really appreciate it. You're definitely one of the most generous and open people in this business. And I look forward to seeing you on the broadcast and, you know, watching you call games sometime soon.
Fingers crossed. William, great to chat with you. I look forward to seeing you soon when things settle down.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.